Welcome to the International Schools Podcast, where we discuss all aspects of technology and life in international schools, with new episodes live every 2 weeks. This podcast is sponsored by Apps Events. We're a Google for Education partner and active since the launch of Google Apps for Education in 2006. We're a team of former educators and all experts in helping schools integrate Google into their schools and their classrooms. All training is customized for each school, and we make sure it has a lasting impact. Literally thousands of educators worldwide have earned their Google Educator certification with us, with our certification boot camps, and these take place every month and get your staff certified quickly. We also host Google Summits, which are fun, two-day conference-style events with concurrent sessions and keynotes delivered by experienced Google trainers, teaching on a broad range of topics using G Suite both in the classroom and in the school. Check it out over at appsevents.com, and we can bring any of these events to your school, which is an amazing way to build a Google community amongst your staff to support each other, plus to increase the profile of yourself and your school. The podcast is also brought to you by Acer for Education. People ask us what Chromebooks we recommend for schools, and after trying them all quite literally, we always recommend Acer. We've been to Acer headquarters in Taiwan to be part of product discussions, and they're genuinely the best thought out, most cost effective, and most importantly durable devices out there. They're always innovating, including the first tablet running Chrome, and the first convertible touchscreen Chromebook. The latest version of this is a Spin 11, which has a stylus and two cameras, and we highly recommend it for schools. They of course have a full range of Windows laptops, and for esports fans, their Predator range is second to none. If you'd like more information, please just leave your email over at gg.gg/Acer Education. That's gg.gg/Acer Education, and we'll get right back to you. And now, on to the interview.
Hey there, Anomalies. Welcome to another episode of the Anomalous Educator Podcast. I'm here today with Dan Taylor, the CEO of App Events. How are you doing, Dan?
Fantastic. Actually, just a small thing is Apps Events. Everybody gets it wrong. I'm a genius at naming companies really badly because Apps Events. Yeah, but it's actually Apps Events.
Apps Events. It will be in the show notes, and I'll promise to spell it correctly when I put it there.
Yeah, it's my fault. I never ever pick good names for companies. I'm terrible.
Well, that's actually an interesting point. I agree with you. When I start companies, I usually use the first name that comes to mind because I see so many people kind of get stuck up on the name and they never get past that. What are your thoughts on that? Kind of when you're picking a name, do you just, that sounds good and go with it? Or how do you do that?
Like I said, I'm probably not the right person to ask. I mean, we've also got a software company for ticketing, and that's called Events Frame. Everybody gets that wrong. They call it Event Frame. Yeah, I don't know. My first company was a consultancy and recruitment agency, and we called it Dun Ross, and that was named after a character in a book I really liked called Noble House about this guy in Hong Kong.
Of course, Taipan, Noble House, that whole series. I've read every single one.
Fantastic. Yeah, it's my favorite book in the world. So yeah, that Ian Dun Ross is kind of the lead character, as you know, in Noble House, and I kind of had it in my mind I'd like to use his name somewhere, and I did. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I think you can overthink it with names, you can overthink it. You can change it as you go along if you want to anyway. It's not the end of the world.
Perfect. So that's advice for any teacher out there who's looking to start online. Just kind of go with the first one that pops into your mind. You can always actually change names later. So it's not really kind of this commitment, especially in the online space. Unless you're a big company, it's very easy to change the names. So you alluded to this a little bit, but you've run multiple companies. And a lot of them are in the education space now and have been in the education space for a while. But in my research, I found out that's not how you started off. You weren't starting off as an education entrepreneur.
No, not at all, career. Not at all.
So could you tell us a little bit about that journey, kind of where you started off and how you ended up where you are now?
Yeah, I studied engineering at University of Aberdeen in Scotland. And I traveled around the world for a year and a half like people do. And I got into IT. I wasn't really sure what to do. And I was kind of fairly technical. So I figured a lot of jobs in IT. So I worked for a bank in the UK and then managed to get into the system called SAP just because they were implementing the system. It's a big German system that big companies use for everything from accounting to inventory. I became a specialist in the system and then went to work for Deloitte as a consultant. I became an SAP specialist with Deloitte and then went freelancing, So I went as a freelancer. I figured out I could just charge my own time
as opposed to, you know, taking a full-time salary and Deloitte taking most of the money. And I did that. And that was kind of my, background before I got into entrepreneurship.
And from that, how did you get into educational entrepreneurship? Because that wasn't straight away either, was it?
No, it wasn't at all. I started another company, which we were talking about earlier. It was a consultancy and recruitment company based in Prague with a friend of mine. And I was, you know, after a while, I hated it, honestly. I didn't like the recruitment world. It was just a lot of work and a lot of sales. And I, you know, I had to do all the sales because my business partner couldn't really sell, I mean, which was a good thing. Then I ended up selling my share of the company to the manager. And a friend of mine who I used to work for in my consulting days went to work for Google. And he was like, Dan, take a look at Google. You know, it's Google Apps. It's now G Suite. It was Google Apps said. It wasn't free for schools. And he's like, it's amazing. It's going to go crazy. You know, Microsoft is charging for their stuff. Google does a lot more. So I really got into it. Actually, I missed one thing. I'd done a bit of education consulting at Deloitte. I'd done a few projects with universities. I just felt amazing. I just got into it. You know, I started working with schools. I had some friends in Prague at the International School of Prague. I wanted to start helping them. And I just got into it full time. And honestly, now I love the education world. You know, like I love working with teachers. I've even studied PGCEI. I'm currently studying PGCEI in education. So I just love the world. But it was really an accident. Just a friend went to work for Google.
What specifically do you love about the education world? Kind of going from the engineering to education in a lot of ways is a big leap as far as, you know, the way things work. What is it about the education world that attracted you?
I like working with teachers, not all of them, obviously, you know, like anything, you know, but I've got a lot of friends now who are teachers, especially in the international school sector where they're kind of very internationally minded kind of people. I get on very well with them. I like that. I like that. Like making money is not just the bottom line. I mean, obviously, you know, I want to get paid and we've got, you know, I've got a family to support and everything, but you know, when you're working for a company, it's, you know, obviously the company wants to make money. When you're working with schools, there's other priorities now. I like the fact that it's, you know, education and giving children a good education is kind of the end product of any work you do, which I like.
Do you have any stories specifically? Because you go into these schools and you introduce them to G Suite, right? I believe that's what they call it. You say they keep changing their name.
Yeah.
Okay.
So sometimes we do. Sometimes they contact us and they're already using G Suite and we might run a conference or a certification event. But yeah, all kinds of things relating to it.
What kind of things do the schools use G Suite for these days?
So the core G Suite is, I guess, you know, Gmail, you probably use Gmail already, mm-hmm. Gmail, Google Drive and Docs. So kind of the core of it is, you know, storing all your files on Google Drive, getting rid of your servers often and running your email system. There's then a bunch of other things. Google has a tool called Google Classroom, which is a learning management system, really simple, but very flexible. So teachers can put their class, like you could even use it, I guess, in your language schools. Teachers put their class in Google Classroom. They can share documents. They can create quizzes and tests within Classroom. They can share material, grading, all kinds of things. And you can integrate it with other systems. So Google Classroom is a huge, huge thing that as well. And then nice. There's tons of other stuff. I mean, YouTube, using YouTube in education, using Google Maps and Earth in terms of geography teaching and economics and different things. You know, Android teaching, Android coding of development, Android apps. So there's so much you can do, you know?
Nice. Well, and we'll dig deep into that in the second part of the interview. So you're going into the schools and either helping them take more advantage of the existing tools or teaching them how to use the tools from scratch. What's the more common scenario for you?
It's more about, typically they're already using, I mean, everything, you know, we do everything, you know, from complete beginners to super advanced, but typically it's focusing on not necessarily just how to use the tools, but how to use the tools in a school context. So how do you use Google Classroom and Drive in the classroom? You know, we're working with classroom teachers, number one. How do you actually use this to run a class, to save time, to do your marking? And then with school administrators, you know, how do you use Google Drive in the back office? How does school leadership use it? So it's more like the practical application of Google in a school environment is what we focus on.
Nice. And what's the biggest challenge you've been kind of seen schools and teachers face when adapting to this technology?
It changes. I think, you know, a lot of, especially older teachers, if they've grown up in kind of the desktop world, they use Microsoft, they're used to a kind of clunky desktop system. They're not used to moving to the web, you know. I mean, people like us, it's just that we've been doing it for a long time and it's just normal, but teachers, a lot of them haven't. And secondly, I think just the nature of cloud computing, like everything changes every month. You log on and the screen looks different, you know, it never stays the same. I think people find that hard, you know, but it's changing. I mean, like, you know, you've got a whole bunch of kids growing up now, kids, like, this has been around for more than, you know, since 2006. So you've got kids now who've grown up and in high school, they've used Google, they've used it at university. They never even use Microsoft Word, you know, so it's changing.
Yeah, you're making me feel old then, right? Yeah. Because I don't think I even had my first email until I was in college, if I'm remembering correctly. So
yeah, I was working my first job. I got my first email address.
Yeah, I think I still used Hotmail. I might still have that thing around somewhere. I have an old Hotmail email address.
I had a Hotmail account as well. Yeah, I probably still got it as well. Yeah.
So what do you see for the future of this industry? Kind of which direction do you see it going? Because you've been in it now for quite a few years, right?
Yeah, I mean, I started Apps events about 10 years ago, and we now do over 300 training events a year. We have teams in every continent. I think Google, like, it's been a huge growth curve for Google in schools, you know. I think it's like leveling off. I think it can't go up forever, especially in the US, where, like, I think 70 or 80% of schools use Chromebooks. That's the other thing I haven't mentioned, Chromebooks. Mm-hmm. You know, laptops that run Google's operating system, loads of schools use this, and we work with that as well. But I think it's leveling off in the US. I think the rest of the world, it's going up a lot in Asia. Africa's almost nothing, so that's got a lot to go. South America, Europe. I think the real growth in Google, honestly, is going to be in business, in G Suite, because it's you know, a lot of SMEs, small companies use Google and G Suite, but now medium, large-sized companies, a lot of them are moving. And I was in a Google have an annual cloud conference in San Francisco, and I was there earlier in the year. And the focus was all about business, you know? So I think that's going to be huge. There's a lot of opportunities for companies around Google in business right now.
So you think that Google's going to start putting a lot more resources into the business part of it than the education part?
Yeah, they are. I mean, I think education will stay the same, you know? I mean, the education team's fairly small within Google, you know, because Google make money now from selling Chromebooks, but before pre-Chromebooks, there wasn't really any money in G Suite for education. So I think it'll stay the same. I think they're focusing on a lot of key accounts and certain countries, you know, the countries change, you know, Google has different focus, but it's going to increase. I think, like I said, in education, the growth is going to be outside the US. I think the US is pretty much, there's not much, it's going to slow the growth, you know, but the rest of the world is a huge opportunity.
So they've reached kind of saturation point in the United States. And you say Asia is really kind of where the boom is right now.
Yeah, Asia, Europe. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, definitely. I mean, Latin America and Africa are still small markets, but they're growing as well, you know.
Why are they so small in Latin America and Africa? What's keeping the penetration from being bigger?
I think it's money. I think especially Africa, you know, schools don't have that much money. They don't even have an IT kind of infrastructure or anything. I mean, Google's a huge advantage for these guys because it's free, it's cloud-based, you know, and if you have it works on any device, you know, students can bring their phones if they have them. But I think it's literally just the money in the education system to kind of, you know, I mean, like I say, it's free, but still you need to think about having an infrastructure. You need a good internet connection. You got to think about some money for devices and stuff.
Okay. So hopefully that'll fix. For those who've listened to the show for a long time, I was a volunteer in an organization called the Peace Corps, which is where they send you overseas for 2 years to work with international communities. And there's a lot of Peace Corps volunteers in Africa working in the education field. Yep. So I was kind of curious as to, you know, what some of the challenges they would face over there are. I was in Latin America myself.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
We did a few events in Africa, Senegal, Tanzania, South Africa, Nigeria, somewhere else, Egypt, but it's hard, you know. I mean, the internet, like just having a good internet connection is mm-hmm. like, you know, tough to get a lot of places.
So hopefully, I think Google's working on those hot air balloons, right? Which are supposed to get wireless internet.
And also, you know, like the thing about G Suite is like it works pretty well on like a regular 3G mobile, and so as you get more mobile penetration, you can run a lot of this just using mobiles. If you have a country where they've got a good all you can eat data plan, you know, people can do it.
Nice. Well, now that we've talked about where Google is and where Google Education is, after the break, we're going to come back and talk with Dan about some more specifics about how Google can be used in the classroom, online, and for people who maybe even want to start their own online business, teachers who want to start their own online business. So we'll be right back after the break with Dan. And we're back with Dan Taylor, the CEO of Apps Events. Got the S this time, right? So
got it.
If you listen to the first part, we talked about all the really cool things that Google is doing in the education space and how accessible it is to everybody out there. Now I want to dig in a little deeper with Dan and kind of talk about some of the specifics of what kind of tools there are and how they can be used. Dan alluded to some of these in the first part of the interview, but I'd like to kind of dig in a little bit deeper. So we're all familiar with the tools, for example, the email tool. I'm sure I know for my businesses, and we track this kind of thing, 60% of the people who open our emails open it from their Gmail account or so. But what other tools are there? And if you could actually describe a little what each tool is. You and I are in the IT field, so we sometimes assume everybody knows, like, you know, Google Drive, what it's for, but not everybody does. So if you'd mind kind of giving us a quick overview.
I mean, I think for teachers, in terms of teachers who are looking to do training, online training or in-person training, I think there's two key things that they can find that are really useful. First one is Google Classroom. We mentioned it earlier in the interview, Google Classroom. So by the way, schools, if anyone of this works for a school and they haven't got G Suite, you can apply. You can even contact me directly. I can help you do it. No charge or anything. I'm sure my email will be on the podcast, but you can apply and get G Suite for free for your school. It's only free for schools. If you're a business, you know, you have to buy a regular license, but it's $50 per user per year. Now, if you want to do some teaching on your own, you could just buy a one user license and you could get Google Classroom, which is a really great tool. Like I said, it allows you to create, let's say you're teaching an online class on any topic, you know, and you've got some students, you can put links to all your course material there. You can put tests in there. You can manage all your, you know, all your users, and you can add any user with a Gmail account. So they don't have to be on your, you know, you can buy a one user account and you can add all your students on there with their Gmail accounts, and you can run your whole class through there, you know? So I would say that's the first thing is Google Classroom. If you're running any kind of training, I think everyone should be using it, you know, whether it's asynchronous, whether it's live training. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is YouTube, you know? If you're recording lessons, you know, you can record, you know, you can use YouTube Live to record, you can stream live. You can add it to Google Classroom as well. So I think, you know, everyone knows about YouTube. You don't need me to tell anyone about that. But I think it's a tool that, you know, you should, if you're giving online training, you should record all your training. I think it's a given. I mean, you're the repurposing content expert, so you know this. But I think YouTube, you know, is simple. But I think that's the main tool along with Classroom that teachers should be using.
So that brings up a question that I know a lot of teachers have. What about privacy? For example, a lot of teachers are concerned when you have younger students who are under 18, even having their email address somewhere can be a risk because, you know, they're worried about hackers getting contact information of younger children. What does Google do to kind of support privacy in the Google Classroom?
If you're talking about G Suite in the school, there's loads of stuff. I mean, for example, I was just running an admin course about this recently in Seattle. Like you can create, it's called sub-organizations, and you can restrict permissions for different age groups. So a lot of schools, for example, they'll say lower age grades, you can only email internally. You restrict outbound or inbound email. And then even for older students, you can do a lot of keyword filtering, a lot of safety filtering. So you've got really granular security, but at a basic level, you know, you can just restrict outbound and even whitelist. You can whitelist other domains like, you know, and certain email accounts. So that's kind of a basic way to do it. But Google takes privacy and safety really seriously.
Has there been any pushback from the parents? As I've said, I run some, you know, software for schools as well. And every once in a while, parents are concerned when kids are signed up for this by a school, but without the parent being informed. Do you have any experience with that?
Well, the school should inform the parents. That's the school's job, you know. And actually, one thing I should say, with Google Classroom, which is really cool, you can give parental access. So you can, a lot of schools do this. You can actually add, you've got a special type of account for a parent where they can see the view of the student's work and everything. I've only seen pushback in a couple of ways. Number one is when you've got a lot of Microsoft parents at the school. This has happened to me in Washington State.
Where I can imagine.
Microsoft Central. It's happened to me at International School of Brussels, where there was a bunch of Microsoft parents some other places. So that's one thing. And second thing, certain countries, Germany, Switzerland, where they're super hot on privacy, you get pushback from the parents. I got friends who run schools in Switzerland and they have all kinds of back and forward about, you know, with about using Google. So I guess they're the only two cases. It happens, you know. And you know, if you're gonna, you know, if you're a tech director of a school, you've got to be ready. You've got to, any system you put in, any new process, you've got to have your document ready that you can send to parents if they ask you, you know, because you're always going to get questions about it.
And what exactly would you include in that document, or what would you recommend somebody include in that document when they're kind of saying, I'm going to use this technology with my students for the first time?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's links to Google's privacy policy, Google's, you know, safety policy, all that kind of stuff. Just here's a link, you know, this is what's covered, this is what isn't, and then, you know, summarize it at a kind of a high level, really.
Nice.
And let's say things like, for example, if you're doing, like I mentioned, and you're restricting incoming and outgoing email for younger grades, just put that as well so they don't worry about it.
When you were talking about restricting incoming and outgoing emails, and again, this is something that is an interest to me as well. It's how much information do you need about the kids in order to create these emails, in the sense that you need their names tied to the emails, or you put in fake names, or you maybe
exactly. A lot of schools use a registration number. They don't even put a name. Yeah.
Perfect. So there's no personal information at all. So Google gives you that option. Okay. And in the classroom, could you get a little more specific about how people are using the classroom? You said you can share a lot of links and files. What are some specific kind of activities that you know of that teachers have been doing within the Google Classroom?
I mean, just that really. So let's say you've got an assessment, you can put it in there. You can, you know, it's kind of like, if you look at Google Classroom, it's kind of like a feed, you know, you can put things, you know, more, you can pin announcements at the top, you can pin documents. But a specific thing is you can create tests, and you can put a, so let's say you've got a test to do, with Google Forms, you can create really good quizzes and tests, and you can even do self-marking and stuff for certain types of tests. So you could put, they could log on to Classroom and okay, 9 o'clock in the morning is a test. They log on, they see the test, it's multiple choice or even an essay answer test, doesn't matter. And you can run all that within Google Classroom, and for certain tests, you can even grade it automatically.
That brings up an interesting question. So let's say you create all this cool material in your Google Classroom. And I'm thinking more now as a teacher who wants to kind of move online and create their own business. Yeah. There are two sides to consider for this. First off, you mentioned there's a cost per user. So is the user the teacher, is the user the student, or is it both?
There's no cost per user, no. I mean, okay. You've got to have G Suite, but you could just buy a one user license, like I said, and then just invite people on their own Gmail accounts to the class.
Perfect. So you wouldn't have to pay for every one of those students, those people with the Gmail accounts that came in there. So it's only, and you said it was $50 a year?
It keeps changing, but I think the business version is $50 for the basic one. But remember, if you're a school and working in a school, it's completely free.
Perfect. And again, thinking as a teacher who's starting a business online, is there a way to charge? I'm assuming not, but maybe with the business suite in the future, they'll integrate something like this in. Is there a way to charge people for access to your classroom?
There's no way to put any kind of paywall on your classroom. You'd have to do that separately.
So they'd pay you, and then you can manually add them and send them the invitation to the.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's not set up for that kind of, you know, commercial environment. It's normally used within the school, but you know, a lot of businesses use it to share information. Not even schools; they use it just as a kind of intranet information repository.
Nice, but it has all the tools, and people are kind of familiar with it already because they've used it, you know, in their own personal life, the Google Suite. So the interface should be.
Yeah, I mean, schools use it. I mean, honestly, schools love it. Schools absolutely love it.
Do you know what percentage of schools? I mean, is there that kind of statistic out there in the world?
I'd love to find out. I mean, I think a lot of schools are using it. So schools, I guess, you know what a learning management system is like.
Yes,
you know,
LMS.
A lot of schools have a big, you know, obviously Moodle's used in higher education, Blackboard, but then you've got loads of others like Schoology using schools. So a lot of schools have like a learning management system, and they're slowly moving to classrooms. Maybe they've turned it on for teachers. They're not forcing it, but they're allowing teachers to use it. And that, I think a lot of schools are doing that, you know, but still using a big, big learning management system.
That's actually one of the softwares I run, Twigicate. It does what Schoology does, but that's the one where we have about 40,000 teachers. And
okay, fantastic. And that's your system, is it?
Yeah, I built that and known it over the years.
Okay, fantastic.
Just like Schoology, it doesn't make any money because one, I don't bill for it. And then I found out after I built it that you can't put ads on it because they use it in schools and schools block everything, every piece of software out there. So it's entirely free for any teachers out there who wanted to.
You could sell subscriptions. You could sell it as a subscription service to schools.
Well, that's it. That's exactly it. But it's just me. So I haven't had time to do any of that. But we still built up about 200,000 users over the last 8 or 9 years.
And what's it called again?
Twigicate. Twigicate. So all listeners here, if you want a free kind of walled garden Facebook tool that you can use, I don't sell you anything. You can go and use Twigicate. It's a simple system, but people seem to like it. So,
fantastic.
Okay. We went over the cost. We went over the tools. Is there anything else you can talk about that Google has that can kind of support teachers outside of the classroom, outside of Google Classroom and the other tools? What other tools do some of the schools use? You mentioned something about maps and some of the other ones.
Yeah, well, I mean, Google Maps and Earth, obviously, for geography teaching and stuff, you know, that's huge. Google Sites, you know, you can use Google Sites to create a free basic website. You know, it's not the most amazing CMS, but you can build I ran the first 4 years of our business with a Google site for our website. So you could do it. Now we're on WordPress. We've moved around a little bit, but You know, I think that's more or less it. I think obviously it's not connected to education, but you know, using Google AdWords to promote your business is huge. I mean, that's Google, although it's not really connected. Using Google Analytics for your website, you know, and really all that's the kind of stuff you know about more than me, I guess. Yeah, they're the main things. You know, they're the main things. And obviously using Google Docs, it's really great. If you want to, you know, normally a teacher will annotate, you know, if you get an essay answer, they'll annotate it. And a great thing with Google Docs is using the commenting feature. You know, teachers use that when they need to give feedback now, when they're using G Suite. So I'd say that's a great thing. You know, you can add a comment that, you know, the student can even respond to the comment as well. And that works really well.
So there's a history of all the changes kind of as from the first draft to the final draft. If you kind
exactly,
of.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, that's a neat idea. I'm actually going to mention that to some of our teachers. Yeah. We're using it as well, because I never thought of it. We use it internally.
It's a great way to give feedback. You know, for teachers to give feedback to students, it's really good.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, then, thanks for giving us kind of deep down into what all the tools that Google has for teachers to use out there, whether they want to use it within their schools or online. We're going to take our second break, and we'll be right back with my favorite part of the interview, which is the pop quiz, where we get to know a little bit more about Dan's inner psyche. So, you know, somebody just, he'll give us the first answers exactly whether we want to or not, right? So we'll be right back. So we'll be back after the break. And we're back with Dan Taylor from Apps Events, and we're my favorite part of the interview. We're going to be finishing up with a pop quiz. So Dan, if you want to stretch out, get ready for it, or you want
ready to go.
Exactly. Make us all limber. Let's get started. It's going to be five questions. First answer that comes to your mind, there are no wrong answers. Well, there might be, but nobody's given one yet. So we'll get started. Okay, question number one. If you were a gangster, what would your gangster name be?
You know, it'd probably be like, I like gangster rap, you know, so it'd probably be like Notorious D.A.N. or something like that. Yeah, some like rap name, I think it'd have to be.
What cartoon character are you most similar to?
I don't know. I don't watch a lot of cartoons. Roadrunner, maybe, because he kind of runs around. I often run around like a headless chicken, and I should be doing different things, but I've always got a lot of energy, you know? So I think Roadrunner, that's got to be that.
Perfect. So your wife's Wile E. Coyote, then, kind of the one who
tries
to stop you, right? So this one's easier. What's your favorite dessert?
Anything with chocolate in, like chocolate sponge pudding, you know, chocolate mousse. That's a big dispute with me and my wife. You know, I like chocolate stuff. She doesn't like chocolate stuff.
We're the opposite. I don't like chocolate. My wife does. But for a while, one of my businesses, I owned a chocolate factory in the Philippines.
Really?
We had an unlimited supply of chocolate, and I used to drink it.
I make chocolate, you got to keep me away from chocolate.
Uh-oh, that's dangerous. Yeah. Well, who knows? If we ever meet up, maybe later in Thailand, I'll bring you some chocolates. You can try it out. What would they write on your tombstone?
I have no idea.
Is that it? I have no idea.
I mean, hopefully people would say, I mean, I'm very loyal to my friends, you know, and family. So I think hopefully something like that.
Okay. What's the worst advice you've ever gotten?
I get a lot of bad advice all the time. I mean, I think it's like, I've often, you know, when you're doing something entrepreneurial, especially in the beginning, everyone's like, oh, don't do it, you know? And that is the right advice for some people, you know, but for me, it wasn't, you know? And I still, every time I'm doing something new or getting into something, you know, because you know when you're an entrepreneur, you're always getting into stuff where, you know, you're maybe leveraging yourself a little bit, you're leveraging your time, and people are always saying, don't do it. And you know, I think for me, it's usually best just to do it. And so I listen to advice, but, you know, people have normally been wrong, I think, when they've told me not to do things.
Nice. So just do it as your kind of business advice for the right people.
Yeah, I mean, try it, because nothing's forever, you know? If it doesn't work out, for most people, you can go and get a job again, you know? Like, it doesn't work out, you know, you've got your tail between your legs, but you get on something else, you know? Life goes on.
Perfect. And the final question, where can people find out more about you?
Dan@appsevents.com, dan@appsevents.com. I'm on Twitter, Dan Taylor Events, DanTaylorEvents. That's probably a good place. You can find me on Instagram, same thing. I'm not too active on there though, but yeah, appsevents.com, you'll see my website.
Perfect. Well, Dan, thanks for coming on the Anomalous Educator podcast. It was a pleasure having you.
Thank you very much. Pleasure. Thanks.